Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Hey, clones. Welcome
Cavaliers
to the Daily
Jungle. Finally back
Wednesday
to work.
In the books. LeBron and the crew are in Boston for game one tonight. We broke that down. We also had three great interviews. Golden State coach Mike Brown joined us after they took apart San Antonio last night. Also, Brett Brown of the 76ers came back in, had an awesome conversation with him like we always do. They've got the number three pick in the lottery. And Milwaukee Brewers center fielder Keon Broxton made it in. Good day. Great podcast. Alvy, roll it. Golden State obviously showed up in a much different way in game two than they did in game one when they got up to a pretty sluggish start. Last night, they were locked in from the opening tip, especially Steph Curry, who knocked in four threes in the first quarter. And then that was that ball game.
Curry right side, pinned down by Draymond.
Man's game.
Three ball, good, and Curry's got four in the quarter. Coming off a 40-point game, one, he has 12 in the first quarter.
I like that they're looking for him, and he's working hard to get open.
Thanks to Warriors Radio, and thanks for coming. See you back in San Antonio. That game was over. That game was over before that game even started. So not only was Golden State looking to get off to a better start, they were looking to send a message. Message being, we don't like hearing how dirty we are or how lucky we were to win game one or that we wouldn't have won that game if Kawhi Leonard didn't go down. They came out with a serious attitude and they kept after it the entire game. They continued to attack the basket late in that blowout. Look, they respect the hell out of Greg Popovich and the Spurs, but after Pop's tirade against Zaza Pachulia and all that hate coming from everybody else, you knew Golden State would have a little something for the Spurs and all their haters, and they did. A nice, swift ass-kicking in a game that was over before it even started. I mean, pretty much the most predictable thing ever. Last night was always going to happen. The Warriors did not play well in game one, so you knew they had to come out with more intensity at both ends, and they had to shoot it better. Just as everybody knew that San Antonio was not going to be the same without Kawhi Leonard. And they weren't, obviously. And now you know why Greg Popovich was so enraged and why Spurs fan was so peed, so ticked off over Zaza Pachulia taking out Kawhi Leonard. Because both Pop and Spurs fan knew that they had no shot at beating Golden State without Kawhi. And the rest of the world saw it last night too as the Warriors crushed them. The Spurs minus Kawhi never even bothered to get off that bus. They never engaged. They never competed. They never fought. Game two of the Western Conference Finals, and they don't even bother showing up. Not my words, but Pop's.
As I watched, I don't think they believed. And you have to believe. And I don't think, as a group, they really did. Which means probably a little bit feeling sorry for themselves. You can't sugarcoat it or say, if we would have just made a couple shots, we'd have been right there. That's pretty lame. So call it like it is, and we didn't come to play. We felt sorry for ourselves. We need to get slapped and come back and play game three and see who we are.
So that's the Pop we know. He said if we had made a couple of shots, it might have been a different game. Yeah, it might have been a 30-point game. That would have been lame. In other words, it's going to have to be a hell of a lot different in game three, or this is going to be a hella short series. And not only did Pop call out his team collectively, he also singled out LaMarcus Aldridge. Singled him out because without Kawhi Leonard, they're going to need a lot more from L.A. And according to Pop, they just didn't get it from him last night.
LaMarcus has got to, he's got to score for us. He can't be timid. He turned down shots in the first quarter. He can't do it. He's got to score. You know, scoring's got to come from someplace. And I think he's got a major responsibility in game three to come out and to get something done, whether it's for himself or teammates. He's got to do it. No doubt about it.
So to challenge a guy like that, you know he's concerned. Concerned that this series is going to be over before it even gets much further than it is. Hey, look, bottom line for me, I'd expect them to struggle without their MVP and their heart and soul. Kawhi Leonard does so much for that team on both ends of the floor. They run everything through him. He's one of the league's best defensive stoppers on the other end. So, of course, they're going to have a tough time without him. But I didn't expect them to just lay down the way they did. They had to know that Golden State was going to come out much more aggressively after that bad start in game one. And they didn't come anywhere near matching the Warriors' energy or their intensity. Instead, they played like a team that knew it didn't have a chance. They wanted nothing to do with that game, and now they're down 2-0. A deficit that they've only come back from once. And it's obviously not going to happen here. Not with Leonard out, or not close to 100%. Not even with him being at 100%. Because Golden State right now is just too good, too talented, too deep, and they're too locked in. They've won 10 in a row, they're on a mission, and the Spurs are going to be nothing more than a speed bump on their way to ripping back their title. So Game 3 should be different, but it's not going to be that different. Oh man, Mike Brown, it's been a little while. It's good to have you back. Mike, how are things?
I can't complain, Jim. This terrific city, terrific organization, and great players to be around. Having a lot of fun this postseason.
Good to hear it. Mike Brown joining us. All right, so Mike, what about Game 2? The team maybe did not come out with the kind of intensity that you would have liked in Game 1. So going into Game 2, what was your message to the team, and what do you make of the way they did show up at the start of the game last night?
Yeah, you know, Steve's been coming to practices and coaches' meetings and stuff like that, and one of the emphasis that he put out there for the team was we need to start the game with a sense of urgency. We tried to ease into Game 1, and you know you can't ease into any game versus the Spurs, especially at this point in the season. So our biggest thing going into Game 2 was, you know, we're not worried necessarily about the score, but let's just don't ease into the game. Let's play with a sense of urgency. Let's make sure we at least punch back or counterpunch at the same time that they're punching us in the mouth, which they did in Game 1, and our guys responded.
Golden State coach Mike Brown joining us. You know, Mike, I'll double back to Steve in a minute, but as I mentioned, he had a franchise record 23 assists in the first half, 39 for the game. There's so much focus on Steph, KD, and Klay as shooters, but what do you make of how this team shares the ball and how everybody on the team seems to enjoy passing?
I truly believe after being around these guys for, you know, for almost a year now, that they each enjoy making the pass for the guy making the play than actually making the play or making the bucket themselves. And they get a huge kick out of celebrating for others. And it's contagious. And, you know, you got a guy like Steph Curry that could shoot the ball. You got a guy like Kevin Durant that can score the ball at high levels, probably the highest in the world. And I feel those guys get just as excited when somebody else scores a bucket. Like I said, therefore, that makes it, you know, fun for everybody because they're celebrating too, and everybody kind of has to fall in line and get with the program. So it's a remarkable thing that they have going on here, starting with their superstars that are able to score the basketball.
Mike Brown joining us. Mike, I've got to ask about that ride of the game yesterday. You were driving to the arena with your son Cam, some friends as well. When you saw the Spurs behind you, what happened next?
So, you know, Cam loves Pop and vice versa, and same with my other son, Elijah, and we're about to turn left across the bridge to go over to Oracle, and one of the police motorcycle cops drives through the light, kind of stops the traffic and tells us, go through. And, you know, I'm barely getting to the arena on time, so I'm like, oh, this is great. You know, saving a little bit of time. So I go through the red light with all the other folks, and we cross the bridge, and there's two more red lights. Same thing. We get stopped at that first red light because it's red, and then that same motorcycle cop and another one, they go through and they kind of wave us through both lights. Now, and when you pull into the parking lot in Oracle, I have to get in the furthest left lane to go through the parking ticket booth because takes the road around the parking lot or in the periphery of that parking lot to get to where the coaches and players park and the team opponent's team bus. So I start to edge over to the left, and the cop that was in front of me, he pulls in front of me. He says, "Hey, you, stop." So I had on a Warriors logo shirt. So, I know I'm just the acting head coach, so he probably doesn't recognize me. So
right.
I start pointing to the logo. I'm like, "Warriors acting head coach." He goes, "You, stop." So, I'm like, you know, this is my own parking lot. You know, I know that's the Spurs team bus, my own parking lot, my own city. I think my own police department, so I start edging forward. Boom, here comes another one. "Hey, you need to stop. You heard the officer."
Wow.
So then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to edge to the right and see if I can go around these guys to the right and then circle back left. So I start to do that, and I hear this over a loudspeaker. "You in the black Range Rover, you must stop now. You heard the officer." I was like, oh, my God. So I stopped. It was an SUV. A cop, and I got all these cops around me. I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm not going anywhere. I'm just going to stay here.
Right.
I'm going to let them take the Spurs bus ahead of me. So I did that, And literally 20 seconds later, my phone rings. I look down, Greg Popovich, San Antonio Spurs.
Wow.
I answer, Jim, he's dying. He's like, Mikey, I was looking, I was like, I'm watching this black Range Rover. I see all these cops around him. I'm like, this guy's not stopping. He's not listening to him. He's about to get arrested.
Wow.
And then when I realized it was you, I fell out laughing.
That's great.
We just died. Yeah, it was funny. It was a funny story.
That's great. Funny and you story. Finally made it there. Mike Brown joining us. That's a crazy story. And Pop probably thought that was hilarious. And then the game started.
Oh, he thought it was hilarious.
Hey, Clones, how about I get at you for a minute about Ferguson? Ferguson helps facilities pros by supplying innovative and reliable products. But what Ferguson really offers are solutions. Ferguson has a dedicated team of facilities experts, and with nationwide coverage, we deliver directly to your facility right when you need them. Plus, Ferguson's broad inventory of maintenance, repair, and operations products, along with plumbing, HVAC, and appliances, sets Ferguson apart from traditional facility suppliers. So learn more about how Ferguson Facility Supply can help your facility at Ferguson.com today. That's Ferguson. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. The two of you go way back, Mike, and then he and Steve Kerr go way back. When Steve was looking for a lead assistant, he called Pop and he asked about you. The story goes that Pop then told you that Steve might be calling. Other teams had called about opportunities in the past, so what was it about this opportunity that appealed to you?
First of all, Steve. I mean, Steve's he's a tremendous, and I'm not saying this just because I'm working for him, but I coached him when he was a player in San Antonio. And he's a terrific human being first. And because of that, it piqued my interest. And then on top of that, Bob Myers, I knew him from afar. We had talked on a couple of occasions in the past. I knew he was also a terrific human being. So I knew that organizationally, from top to bottom, they were in sync. And in our business, it's hard to find a lot of times where everybody's on the same page. And you want that from ownership to management to the coaching staff. You want to be around that because that gives you your first chance to succeed. And then, Jim, on top of that, if you look at the team, from the outside looking in, they have great guys. Not only do they have great guys, but they have guys that are capable to win it every year that they step on the floor. And so for me to be around great players that are great individuals and have that opportunity to go win a championship every year you step out on the floor, it was a no-brainer after talking to Pop and Steve.
Mike Brown joining us for a few more moments. Mike, it's a great opportunity, but it's a different sort of place with a different sort of culture. After you were hired, you and your son, for instance, went to a summer league practice in Vegas, and there was a DJ at practice while the guys were stretching. So you probably think, yeah, that's a little bit different, except that the DJ did not stop playing music after they were done stretching, and then he was there at training camp. What did you make of that whole thing?
It's like one of the basketball operations guys. The way it looked to me, it looked like he was at a DJ table. That's why I called him that. But it was a little different for me. But it was good for me because there's a million different ways to skin a cat. These guys, Steve has given this group a ton of ownership, and they've taken it and ran with it, but they are very responsible with it as players. And when you can give a group of guys ownership of the process where they feel like they have a lot vested in all of the decisions out there, then it makes them try that much harder because they know that they're truly a part of it. And that was what the Summer League was about, and that's what this whole program is about. It threw me off guard at first because I didn't know what to expect. I'm sitting there talking to my son, Cam, and I'm like, Cam, I don't think they're going to turn this music off. And Cam looked at me like, I don't know, Dad. Same thing during the regular season. But as the time went along, again, I started adapting to the culture. And I think at the end of the day, it's helped me become not only a better coach, but a better person, too. So I've enjoyed it, and I've learned a lot from it.
So two quick things before you go, Mike. In terms of the culture, it's so good, and it exists. And you'd never look to make this about you right now. So how do you go about maintaining the vibe and the culture we're talking about while at the same time bringing what you have to offer to this team right now?
Well, that's one of the things. When Steve stepped aside, I went to most of the leaders on the team, and I told him, I said, hey, I've learned a lot from Steve and Bob and the culture here and you guys. And I said, but you're gonna have to remember – I'm not Steve, I know we have a good thing going, and I have a good sense of how to be able to keep it going. But there are going to be times when I'm going to have to be myself. And to a man, all of them were like, no, you better be yourself. You know, we need you to be in the seat that you're in and not try to be Steve, but be yourself while understanding what we're all about. And so for me, you know, being around this game for as long as I've been and being in the different situations I've been in, for me, it's been a pretty seamless process, especially with the staff that I have around me. You know, these guys have been around Steve for going on 3 years now, and they've been terrific, from, you know, Bruce Frazier to Ron Adams to Jaren Collins. They've all helped out in this process, so it's made it fairly easy for me. But having said that, yeah, there are instances where, you know, I have to be myself because I don't know any other way.
Mike Brown, my guest. You know, Mike, one last thought. You and I talked so frequently when you were coaching with the Cavaliers and then also when you were with L.A. But how different is your approach now, and how different are you as a coach now than you were only a few years back?
You know, I feel like I'm a lot different. This is spending last year in San Antonio and just watching how Pop had evolved. You know, I was last with him as an assistant in 2003, and then to be able to spend time with him last year in 2016, which is 13 years later, seeing that, yes, he's still the same coach to a certain degree, has still the same beliefs and his principles and all that, but he has evolved with the times and with the group that he had. And now to come here and be around Steve and the culture here, it's made me realize that, you know, not to sweat the small stuff, I guess, if there was one big thing. I felt like I was a detail coach, probably at times a little over the top with it. And being here and seeing how this process is gone, and like I said, San Antonio's last year, it's made me probably relax a little bit more and kind of take things in stride and see the big picture as opposed to short-term stuff or, you know, trying to maximize every day, because this business or this NBA season is a long, draining season on everybody. And, you know, if you're focusing on the big picture, I think you'll get a lot more out of your guys than the other way. It's just my personal opinion from being around it and seeing how this works.
But in this given week, he's called three times, and it's only Wednesday. Let's find out. Gino, now I got you. What's up?
Dude, that was so good. I don't know if you know this about me, but the bad callers are the best callers, man. I live for calls like the one you just took from J-Cobb in NorCal. By the way, never heard of you. When I go to a restaurant, I don't call the sous chef and the wait staff over to talk about my meal. So no thanks, Corn Cob and NorCal, but good for you, man. You know, I had no intention of calling today at all, because we all know, Rome, nobody knows this more than you. The third donut, it's a mistake every time, but who cares? Let's do it. So you were saying earlier there's no way I would call in after that curb stomping that the Spurs took last night. But I got to be honest with you, man, anybody can chirp after a win. No props at all for front-running on the phone. Stand up when your team is down. Now I'm interested. Now I got some respect for you. So you know what happened last night? All you Warriors fans are just freaking out. You know what happened last night? The Dubs held home court. That's it. That's all that happened last night. You don't get an extra win for point totals. You're not up 3-0 after that. You know what? The Rockets laid a beat down in game one against the Spurs. I was there. I lived through it. It still counted for one win, you idiots. And it didn't matter in the end. So congratulations, Warriors. You did what you should have done. Hey, I'm just happy that Draymond kept his hockey stick out of the other team's groin. Good for you, Draymond. Everybody's really proud of you. You've grown as a human being in the last year. You notice that unlike the Warriors, the Spurs kept their feet to themselves when the Warriors were rolling last night. Hey, Zaza, if you want to make this right, I mean, if you really want to turn your image around, go slide your foot under Putin and leave everybody in the NBA alone. See you in San Antonio, Warriors, and bring your hockey gear later, Romy.
Rock him. Show's better when the made guys come out. Gino does it 3 days in a row. Cavaliers Celtics, we'll spend a couple of minutes on that. Vacation is over. The King and the Cavs finally getting to go back to work tonight. Game one of the Eastern Conference Finals, tipping off at 8:30 Eastern. And after running through Indiana and Toronto in the 8-game minimum and waiting 10 days to see how the Celtics and Wizards would shake out, legitimately the biggest concern the Cavs have right now is rust. And that's pretty much it. And I don't even think that's much of a concern. I'll tell you what's not a concern, that LeBron has played way too many minutes and he's got way too many miles on him. That may have been a concern at the end of the year, but not now. And maybe it shouldn't have ever been a concern.
The guy knows how to take care of himself. He knows what he has to do to get himself ready to rest and to recover. And the fact that the Cavaliers have sat out 24 of the 32 nights this postseason is going to help him and them a hell of a lot. LeBron knows he only needs 8 more wins in order to go icon and to go back-to-back. And 4 of the 8 really aren't going to be that tough. Sorry, Chouz. 4 of the 8 are not going to be that tough. Because any way I crack this series, it falls the Cavs' way. Cleveland is playing at a different level than Boston, who struggled just to get here. I mean, getting here is the thing. They did get here. Credit for that. But the Cavaliers are playing at a much higher level. They're well-rested. They've got a chip on their shoulder, and they own the regular season series. Their last meeting was a curb-stomping in Boston's house when LeBron sent a message in a regular season game that he pretended not to care about. Remember that? You know, I'm looking at this thing. I don't really see where the Celtics have any discernible edge in the matchup, other than maybe the home floor, which is going to mean next to nothing against the Cavaliers. And yes, Isaiah Thomas has stepped up onto the big stage in a very big way, but even he isn't playing anywhere near the level of LeBron is. LeBron's never played this well in the postseason. So Boston's on a roll. They just ripped the number one pick in the draft. They've played their way into the conference finals, but they're about to run into a buzzsaw, a team that's built for the postseason and one that they really do not match up with. So, be happy that Danny Ainge has done as good a job as he has of rebuilding this thing and that they are ahead of schedule and that it's only going to get better. Just not right now. Not against the Cavs. I've got way too much respect for IT, Brad Stevens, and Ainge to say something crazy is going to happen like the Celtics are going to get swept, but they are going to lose in 5. Because we're all going to get that trilogy. There's no doubt about that. It's only a matter of how long we have to wait to see it. And if you ask me, not that long at all. Not that long at all. Warriors up 2-0 on the Spurs. They've only come back from that deficit once. It's not going to happen a second time this year. And I don't see how the Cavaliers don't win this thing in 5. Hey, look. Chowders. Celtic fans. I would never, ever disrespect you or your organization by coming here and saying, you're going to get swept. I would never disrespect you like that. But you are going to lose in 5. And these guys have way too much heart, way too much pride, way too much tradition, way too much history to get swept. That's not going to happen. But they will lose in 5. Let's go to Vancouver. Logan in Vancouver. Hey, Logan, good morning. How are you?
Hey, how's it going, Rome? Yeah, in Vancouver right now, but I'm a Bostonian. I am offended, Rome. I'm absolutely offended. And yes, I'm talking about the callers because when I'm talking about the first good take ever, I am absolutely, completely offended that you let people on this show that have scripted everything come on, read it in a monotone voice, and claim like they're the king of the castle. Like, if you are a true sports fan, you can go off the top any single day of the week. You can talk about the passion of your team or whatever you want to talk about without reading it like a robot, a mindless robot that absolutely has nothing to say on the subject. Here's the deal with Cavs and Celtics. We have not been respected at any point. You can talk to us and say, I will never disrespect the Celtics, but the fact is we have been disrespected. LeBron comes on wearing that Fighting Irish t-shirt yesterday. It is absolutely the wrong decision to not go for the one seed, and we're going to prove it tonight because home crowd, if you have not seen the Celtics lately, you need to see that garden jumping, and you bet it's going to be jumping tonight. I do not care about LeBron. I do not care about Cleveland. That Matt, Mark, Alex, whatever his name was who just called him from Cleveland, I do not respect you enough to remember your name. We are going to go in. We're going to take care of home court. We're going to win it in 7. We're going to get some respect back. LeBron, your time has come. It's done. I do not care. Time to win another run. Banner 18. Thanks, Rome.
All right, see ya. Logan in Vancouver. All right, so Logan in Vancouver is in Vancouver but from Boston and want to make the point that he's offended. Let's get a phone call in here. We go to Cleveland. Alex in C-Town. Nice to have you, Alex. Good morning. What's up?
Bad smack. What's up, brother?
What's going on?
I'm calling from the Tribe game right now, actually. Playing some hooky with the old lady today. 85 and sunny here in the land. Snuck a few road sodas in past security, actually. So, Rome, I want to bang you with some truth right now. I'm getting ready for the Eastern Conference Finals tonight. I got to tell you, the city of Boston is such an afterthought to us right now. Just another pit stop on our banner collection tour. Mark in Boston, please inform your silly little mayor that KJ and Hondo won't be walking out of the garden tonight. Beantown, we kicked your ass last October in the ALDS, ruining Big Poppy's fat farewell. We took Tito Francona from you. What's next? The goofy goat, Tom Brady, going to relocate himself and his smoked-out wife to Cleveland? Also, can we give some recognition to Francona's chaw bucket? Imagine if the kids from Sandlot packed those lips before their little merry-go-round ride. If we're all being honest, we're all waiting for Golden State. Can't wait to murder the Warriors and crush KD's tower dream. So aggravated by ESPN and the ridiculous headline. Warriors swept the first two rounds, and the story reads, Dubs look unstoppable, but Cavs do the same. Instead, it's LeBron dominates, but how can Monkey and the Cavs continue this? I know we were cracking the Bay Area yesterday, so let's continue that. Those spoiled tech nerds gentrifying the city, smoking that hippie lettuce, eating sushi, driving up foursome of tickets to Oracle Arena to your salary. Romy, Cleveland is a gritty city, man. You've been here. You know what I'm talking about. We have the West Side Market. I'm talking Croatian, Serbs, Polish, haggling at the 50-cent price tag on a cabbage and lettuce for hours on end. LeBron doesn't even tip here. But guess what? Here in Cleveland, we have great hospitals, a lake that hasn't caught on fire in 50 years, and the defending NBA champs. War Cavs going 16-0 this postseason, and unwar USC fans stealing candy from the bottom row of vending machines. As always, Romy, I'll leave it up to you to be the judge, but I'll say in anticipation, rack him, I'm out.
I think I will. Alex in Cleveland. Mark in Boston, right to the front of the line. What's going on, Mark? How are you?
Wizard, what's cracking, man?
What's up?
Listen, I don't take exception to guys like Alex in Cleveland calling and being confident about the Cavs. He should be. They're arguably the best team in the NBA. Where I do take exception is when guys like that get a little bit of taste of success. They come and they pump their chest out and don't know how to act like they've been there before. Like the family of 12 living in a triple-wide trailer that hits the Powerball, and then it's back to being broke 3 years later. A minimum wage brain is going to be a minimum wage person for the rest of their life, just like the city of Cleveland. And how cosmically amazing was it that the universe hates Cleveland so much that they blessed them with a 3-1 victory over the Warriors. And then once they puffed their chest out and got all cocky and arrogant, the universe was like, whoa, you're still Cleveland. And then did the exact same thing to the Cleveland Indians. Listen, bro, Alex in Cleveland, if you want to put my name in your mouth, I suggest that you merge on over to that little lazy river to the left-hand side where guys are floating around like the Cal in Vegas's, the Rick in Buffalo's, where you can just take little pot shots and maybe they'll respond. But if you come at a big dog and you're some punk from the mistake on the lake, I'm going to probably treat you the same way your parents have looked at you for the better part of your life, the mistake with wheat takes. See you, Rome.
See you, Mark. Rack him. See you in the smack-off. Sixers head coach Brett Brown is my guest. Great to visit with you once again. And after last night's draft lottery, you know you'll be picking third in this year's draft. So what was your reaction when you found out that that was the result and that's where you're going to pick?
I mean, I was excited. We've had, going on 4 years now of experience doing this in Philadelphia. And sort of my judgment has always been, my criteria has been, is like, just get me to the commercial. And, you know, it means you're in the top three. And after that, you know, it plays out as it plays out. And so for us to be able, again, to surpass the commercial and end up with that third spot, especially when you look at the ripple effects of next year where we get the Lakers pick unprotected, and then the following year we got a Sacramento pick, from a staggered perspective and sort of a progressive perspective, I think it's also good for the organization.
And also in terms of what Brian Colangelo was talking about, Brett, what you have now is you have some clarity. It's starting to come together. You can see it. And this is on top of the fact that you had an 18-win improvement from last year to this year, despite the fact that you only had Joel Embiid for 31 games and you had 0 games from Ben Simmons, and now you've got that third pick. What does that tell you about the future of this team?
I think to what you're hinting at, it's incredibly promising. I feel like our time last year with Joel, I refer to him often as I felt like he was borrowed. You know, we only had him for 31 games, and, you know, the 31 games that he played, it was sort of at times jaw-dropping how good I think that he actually can be. And we saw, you know, hints of brilliance right off the bat. But I think the exciting thing for me is he has really so much more to grow to. The excitement of having Ben Simmons come into this, the first player chosen in last year's draft and not having played a second. You know, Dario Saric got some good minutes under his belt as a rookie. And so you add it all up with the improvement of T.J. McConnell and the emergence of Robert Covington. And, you know, I think that good things are happening all over the place. It's stuff that, you know, we're really excited to be a part of right now in Philadelphia.
We're talking to Brett Brown. You know, Brett, you go back to Joel for a minute, and he was the team's onstage representative, and he seemed to be having a great time. And when you look at the kid, he's only 23, and he's got so much it. He's got so much charisma. But on top of that, you said, quote, he's incredibly gifted intellectually as it relates to basketball. He has no right to see or think the game at the level that I think he does, end quote. How do you explain that this guy who played just a total of 31 games in his entire NBA career and is just 31 can see and think the game the way that he does? How do you explain it?
It's a good question. Things like he's so studied visually. He the time that he spends watching tape of either Duncan's post moves or what Olajuwon did is significant, and his ability to translate that from a visual perspective now to an actual action on the court is maybe the best that I've ever coached. I liken it to, you know, somebody that can play music, play the piano by ear. He just has a gift. He really has a gift, and I stand by that comment of he's got no right to play the game or think the game at the level that I believe that he does, given his limited experience over the past, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, right? It's a very unusual route that he's taken to end up where he is. And as I said a moment ago, the thing I get most excited about is he's obviously just scratching the surface to what I think he can be once he actually starts playing repetitive basketball games.
Philadelphia head coach Brett Brown joining us, and given what you've seen and what you've done and who you've worked with, that's exceptional praise. You said the other day, Brett, that you expect Simmons to play summer or don't expect him to play summer league ball this year, but he has been doing a lot of skill work. How far along is he in his recovery process?
He's I would say, like a C, you know, C plus from what would end up an A. If an A where he's playing 5-on-5 and, you know, getting after it and playing that level of basketball, he's not there yet. What has gone from is like 1-on-0 and shooting and a little bit of 1-on-1 to progressing to some 3-on-3 and half court. And let's say that equals a C. That's where he's at right now. And we're really excited to have a summer of development. Jim, we've got the first time ever since I've been coaching in Philadelphia, our practice facility to use in the summertime. In previous years, we were at a, you know, Division III college gym with one court and, you know, 6 baskets that were sort of scrunched into one court. And now we've got a 2-court facility with 12 space baskets with all the physiotherapy and restaurant and strength and conditioning parts of the program that you need, where it's just one-stop shopping, a legitimate, like, basketball health club. And so the work that Ben has been doing along with everybody else in our first time here using this facility in a summer situation is excellent. And we're really looking forward to having a great June of development. And as I've said to Ben, you know, I expect him to captain that gym and really start emerging himself as one of our main leaders.
Brett Brown joining us. You know, Brett, one more thing about him. You and I have talked in the past. The thing about Simmons playing, I mean, it's crazy to think, but he's a 6'10" guy that can play point guard. And in some ways, the idea of a 6'10" guy playing point is crazy. But at the same time, when you see what Milwaukee's done with the Greek Freak, or when you see 1 7-footer after another playing and shooting beyond the arc, how much has the game changed when it comes to positions?
I think that it's changed a lot, and I feel like we're all reminded of the direction the sport is pointing toward as we sit back and watch NBA playoffs. I've said to you in previous conversations that I don't believe, you know, the sport is getting any slower. I think the greatest athletes in the world play in the NBA. I think that we're not going to look back and think that there are less and less threes being taken. There are going to be more and more three-point shots that are being taken. When you actually study a graph, and I do, the history of sort of that comment about the evolution of sizes and multi-positions and the growth of the three-point shot, just in regards to frequency and volume of attempts to continue to grow, this sport, that's the way our sport is going. Instead of sort of like fighting it, we're all trying to get ahead of the story. And, you know, we all admit that if we're all walking in lockstep, where do you find the edge? You know, how do you find a way to be different? And so we're always curious, you know, trying to explore ways to get ahead of things and actually find an edge. With Ben Simmons, you know, his main gift is he sees the floor well. He thinks like a point guard. It sounds unusual because he's 6'10". If he were 6'4", it wouldn't sound as sort of as much of an outlier. But we're committed to trying to grow him here, and we want to play that style of play that I just said a moment ago that we think the game is progressing to.
Yeah, Brett, to that point that we're all walking in lockstep, we're all trying to find a way to get an edge over everybody else. I know that you're no different. I know head coaches think like that. I'm sure you do. I had Mike Brown on, as I mentioned earlier today, and I said to him, how are you different now than you were even a few years back? I mean, so from the outside, and especially talking to you right now, it feels like the team has not only turned the corner, but could be prepared to take another big step. But even going back to before your time with the Spurs, and you've been a head coach in Australia, it's not like you're new to being a head coach. It's clear that that drive and that competitiveness that you have not diminished at all. But how are you different as a head coach now than even when you first took over in Philadelphia?
I mean, I've always been sort of inherently curious. I'm very curious about just ways that people either coach or lead or manage. You know, you take pride in studying other leaders, other coaches from different sports. I was very privileged because I grew up the son of an American coach and played NCAA basketball under Rick Pitino, and then went overseas and coached 17 years in a FIBA environment. And then, you know, I'm going into my 17th year in the NBA. So I've really seen the world play the sport, and I grew up under a basketball roof with my father as a coach. And so the game isn't the game isn't the game. All those different sports around the planet are different. So trying to learn different parts of the world that you think have carryover to the United States and the NBA, studying different leaders, studying different ways to manage. I think if I were to answer your question simply, it's delegation. I feel like my management, my coaching style over the years has changed, where I really try to see the world from a cloud and delegate and hold the people underneath me highly accountable. I've designed my coaching staff very similar to an NFL staff, where I have somebody that's helping me with offense and defense and special teams, both offense and defense, analytics, shooting coaches, video people. And so those tentacles that come underneath me, you know, you really try to coach hard and coach them up and have them help me manage our program. And I feel like we're at a stage now where I've been able to retain my staff now for 4 years, although, you know, with the demise of Nerlens Noel, the trade of Nerlens Noel, he was the last player that was with me at the start, whereas I have the large majority of my coaching staff. And so you can build a culture, you can build a system, and I think in many ways it's a little bit like plug and play. No matter who we draft, or Ben or Joel or whatever, you know, they're coming into a system, they're coming into something that we hope feels of a culture and something that is in place that's organized. Those types of things come to my mind as I look back over a long time coaching.
And that's not going to happen overnight. So then a final thought, when you and I spoke in January, It was a classic conversation in the sense that you were out for a run in Philadelphia. We talked about the city. We talked about what it means to be coaching in that city, the fact that there's an edge and a certain amount of pride within the city. All of that said, what would it mean for you to bring the Sixers back to the playoffs for this fan base and for this particular city?
I mean, Jim, this city is about to blow up if we can get this right. You feel it. You feel the vibe in the street. You feel it if you're in a Starbucks. You feel it if you walk. And I got a 12-year-old son, and so I'm deep into the city of Philadelphia's, you know, playgrounds and their courts. He's, you know, part of this whole Philly street scene, the AAU scene. And so I'm really sort of immersed into the bowels of the city, you know, the youth of the game, the coaches of the game. And you go into, like, we experienced that great month of January where Joel was healthy and people were playing, and you just feel that we're that close to getting this right, where this city is going to jump, and it's starved of basketball success. It's a highly competitive blue collar city, as we know, that loves its sport, and I just think it's right. You know, we're going to have probably, I mean, our marketing people tell me every game, let's say that they're wrong by a little bit, they think we're going to sell out the large majority of our games. And this is a team that won, you know, 28 games last year. And so all over the place, we feel very strong about the direction of the program and really excited for the fans of Philadelphia.
Brett, last thought. You mentioned your 12-year-old son and playing some AAU ball. I've got a 16-year-old now who plays high school baseball. I've got a 12-year-old son who plays club baseball. I mean, it's not exactly like being a head coach in the NBA and having a kid who plays, but it really is one of the highlights of my life. There's nothing I enjoy more than seeing the kids get out there and play and compete and the lessons they get from it. So what's it like for you to see your 12-year-old play AAU ball?
Well, you know what's funny is because of the ages, you just said 16 and 12, and, you know, you're doing baseball, I'm doing basketball. You feel exactly what I feel. There is just no greater thrill for me than to, you know, I sit up all by myself in the corner of a gym or the corner of a playground. And many times I don't even sit with my wife. Others might think, like, that sounds a little bit crazy, but
I like going
off by myself.
Yep.
And I just love it. You know, I really enjoy watching him and helping him. I'm thrilled to be able to have the environment that I have to share with him. And it's a real special time of my life, I know, coaching him at this age.
It's the best. Keon Broxton is my guest. Now, you singled in the top of the first last night. You got everything started in a 5-run first inning. Let me start right there. When you're on the road and you drop a game the day before, how nice is it to come out and hang 5 runs on somebody in the first?
It's huge, man. It's huge to come back out and just pick up where we left off on the previous wins before. And just to get some start in the first inning, it gives our pitcher a lot of confidence to go out there on the mound to dominate. And Jimmy did a great job last night in making his pitches and making it hard for the opposing team to get some damage done. So yesterday was an all-around good game for the team.
So you had to go last night without Eric Thames. He had strep throat. But the team, even without him, still mashes. In fact, as a team, you lead the league in home runs. You're second in the majors in runs scored. So what's the attitude of this offense when you guys step into the batter's box?
The attitude is to win, is to succeed. That's everyone's attitude. Every time they step up to the plate, we have a lot of talented guys that go out there and put together good at-bats and put good will on the ball and make things happen for the team. And it's a lot of fun watching the team just go out there and really feel comfortable at home and just really do good things for the team. It's awesome.
Keon Broxton joining us. You know, from a personal standpoint, you started the season a little bit slowly, and then late in April, you talked about how you backed off from the plate a little bit. Where did the idea come from for that change, and then how much of a difference does it make in your ability to see the ball?
That actually came from Darnell Coles and Craig Counsell. I was doing early BP, and I was hitting, and Counsell was throwing, and he was throwing a couple balls in, and I was just taking them, and they were more of the middle of the plate. So him and Darnell just wanted to try and see if backing off the plate would make that a little bit different. And I ended up seeing the ball a lot better, and I was able to recognize some pitches, and it got me to a good foundation in the box. And it's always a process, man. You always got to make adjustments according to how the pitchers are pitching you and how you're feeling that day. And and everything. So that's always an adjustment that needs to be made on a day-to-day basis. But that's a daily grind of baseball, man. It's a lot of fun, and the whole team's doing a great job with that as well.
Milwaukee center fielder Keon Broxton joining us. I mean, it really is. It's the ultimate grind. It's 162 games, and you got to find a way to be regimented. You got to stick to your routine, but it's such a grind. How do you get through the grind, stay fresh, and stay sharp?
That's easy to do in the big leagues, man. I mean, just staying fresh and getting your body prepared is probably a big thing, but staying fresh and staying ready to go is very, very easy to do in the big leagues. Especially when you're playing in the middle of the park, you got all these great fans out there cheering you on. And then on away games, man, you have a job. I always say this is all we have. We don't have anything else. So it's easy to come and show up to the ballpark and work and get better and not really worry about anything else but that. So I say it's a grind. I only say it's a grind because the game is hard. You know, it's a tough game, and things won't always go your way. You can do everything perfect in the box and still don't get a hit. So, you know, that's what I mean by daily grind. But just showing up at the ballpark every day, willing to work and help yourself, that's the easy part.
Keon Broxton joining us. You know, you mentioned the grind, and it is that. So you and I talked for a moment about what it was like earlier in the year when you were struggling a little bit, but Craig Counsell, your manager, said, look, we're going to keep running him out there. That's our guy. We need him to be out there. He's going to be fine. So when you're going through a rough patch, you know, maybe you don't lose faith yourself. It's frustrating. It's challenging. But how valuable is it to have a manager who's got that kind of confidence in you, and he knows that your production is going to be worth waiting for, and he does have your back, and he will keep playing you?
Oh, that's awesome, man. That's a relief for sure. To know that your manager is behind you 100%, and is willing to wait until everything comes together for you. I think that's a big thing for me, and it's a definitely a big thing for a young player like me to know that. But it's also one of those things where he has all his faith in you, but that means like it's time to get it going. It's time to produce for the team and make things happen. So it's both ways, but it's definitely good for me. Just knowing that I do have a lot of faith in me, but it's all also like a little kick in the butt to get going.
Talking to Keon Broxton, you know, growing up, I mean, as a good athlete, as a young player or a young athlete, you had different options. When you were growing up, you and your cousin were big into skateboarding. How did you first get hooked on that, and what was your style like on the board?
Well, I just got hooked on that just from my neighborhood friends and my cousin. I think my cousin was the first one to really introduce me in skateboarding. And the first time I picked up a skateboard, I didn't put it down for like the next three to 4 years. So it was awesome. My style of skateboarding was just, I don't know how I would, you know, describe my style of skateboarding. I was kind of an all-around skateboarder, street and half pipe, vert, that's what they call it back then. I think I was a little bit better at vert than I was street skating. I think my specialty was grinding. I could really hop up there and do a board slide on pretty much anything, or like a 50-50. So it was just all around, and just those days were awesome, man. It was a lot of fun waking up every day and going to the skate park and having fun with all our neighborhood friends and just trying new things, pushing your body to the limit.
Yeah, I was going to say, what were those days like? Because it wasn't just a matter of going to the local skate park. You and your guys were connected to a local shop called Surf Tribe, and you guys would show up at competitions in Surf Tribe gear. So what were those days like?
Oh, those are awesome, man. You know, you learn a lot about yourself skateboarding, man. And going to competitions was probably the best in the world. And you know, going to a competition about the neighborhood good guys that are out there skateboarding and who's supposed to win the competition, and you got other skate shops out there, and it's a lot of fun. It's just good, clean competition, and it's fun, and it keeps a lot of kids out of trouble, and I encourage a lot of kids to go out there and pick up a skateboard and go to a skate park every day. You learn a lot of life lessons doing that, and meet a lot of good people and just have a lot of fun.
So who is your favorite skater? Who is your guy growing up?
My guy growing up, I had a bunch of different ones, but I think it was Eric Costin back then. Whenever I was growing up, he was one of the main guys that was just lights out on a skateboard.
Keon Broxton, my guest. Listen, before you came on and before you came over to the Brewers in a trade with Pittsburgh back in December in 2015, that's how that's set up. But as soon as I mentioned you'd be on today, I started hearing from Brewer fans about how pumped they were. And that happens every time we talk Brewer baseball where I have one of the guys on. So what's it like playing in Milwaukee?
Oh, it's awesome, man. The fans care a lot. And they're always out there supporting you, whether you win or lose. And they're just there to see their team win. And they give us a lot of support day in and day out. And no matter the weather, if it's cold outside, you know, we have the dome. But, I mean, they still got to come to the game. So they don't care, man. They just want to come and cheer us on and have a good time and watch some baseball.
Let's do this. We go to Northern California. Jacob on line 4. Jacob, what's up? Good morning.
Romies, thank you for the time and the 5 extra followers I'm going to get from it. Hey, listen, I respect all the made guys. Trust me, I do. But when somebody cracks on my half of the state, especially the city, I got to come back at them. So, Gino, in San Antonio, stick to the rodeo, Romeo. Zaza ain't dirty. He was just in a hurry. After these fists fly, son, your vision will be blurry. Talking smack on the city with the golden skate. I'm about to go to your river so I can drain my snake. Coffee shop, weed shop, oh, strong take. You don't even got a fuck.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
As always, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you. Now, all you have to do is hit subscribe if you haven't done that. Tell a friend if you haven't done that. And most of all, just trust that podcast. Check back tomorrow. We'll see you then.